Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Amara Jones. Every day, the attacks on trans kids grow louder, and more anti-trans bills keep moving through state legislatures. In this season of the Anti-Trans Hate Machine, we're going to illuminate how the right wing has fueled these bills by generating a breathtaking and wide-ranging disinformation campaign.
It's spreading like wildfire on the internet. It's then being discussed by families and churches.
None of this is an accident. It's a strategy to delegitimize trans people and create a world where existence is a question. Subscribe to season 2 of the Anti-Trans Hate Machine, A Plot Against Equality, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp. This all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more.
Osiris.
What's up? This is Ryan Stasek from Humphreys McGee. This podcast is part of the Osiris podcast family. Osiris is a growing community of music and culture podcasts, connecting music fans with conversation, commentary, and of course, lots of music. Osiris works in partnership with Relics Magazine.
Osiris.
Hey everybody, it's RJ. This is the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 137. This week, Brad talked with two guys who just wrote a book about fish called 100 Things Fish Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. It's coming out on June 1st. Andy Smith and Jason Gershany, they both have written articles in the past on fish and have some background in this stuff, and they wrote a book with 100 things that fish fans should know and do before they die. We happen to be at number 43. I know that for sure. So that's pretty cool. But that's not the only reason we interviewed them. We obviously want to bring people to hear a little bit more about from them about what they did. The foreword for the book is written by Mike Greenhouse, who's editor of Relics, of course, who's a partner of Osiris and HF Pod. Cool conversation that Brad's able to have with them. And there's a couple of events that they're having to release the book. One is a show at the Brooklyn Bowl Friday, June 1st with the Dead Fish Orchestra. And then in Burlington on June 22nd at the Skinny Pancake, there'll be a book release party featuring Formula 5, a band from New York. And there will be a Cash or Trade double IPA that Fiddlehead Brewing Company created that will be there. So that's pretty cool. It's from Cash or Trade and Waterwheel Foundation. So if you're in Burlington, June 22nd, check that out. If you're in Brooklyn or New York on Friday, June 1st, go check out that show. But hope you enjoyed this conversation with Andy and Jason that Brad put together. And obviously we'll put the link in the show notes to if you want to pick up the book. We appreciate everybody's support. I appreciate you tuning in. If you haven't yet, give us a review on iTunes. And, of course, check out OsirisPod.com for more awesome podcasts where we've added a few more and really good stuff going on. By the time you hear this, we will have just gotten back from Delfest where we're doing some interviews with a bunch of bluegrass artists. And we're really looking forward to that. And we have a lot of really cool stuff in store this summer, including Curveball, of course. So stay tuned for a lot more information about Fish Summer Tour and what we're going to be doing there with Osiris and HF Pod. Also in the show notes, you'll see a link to the HF Pod t-shirts. Summer Tour is around the corner, sort of. It's around a corner, but a very, very far corner. But if you need to stock up on gear before Summer Tour, we recommend that you pick up an HF Pod t-shirt. They make you look cool and heady and very knowledgeable about fish, so you should grab one. All right, let's get into the interview. Enjoy. Thanks for listening.
This is Brad. I'm lucky enough to be here with a couple of authors, established authors, Jason and Andy. Hey, guys, how you doing?
Great. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So, Andy, you're in New York, right?
Yep. I'm in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, USA.
Nice. And then Jason is on my time zone in Portland, right, Jason?
Absolutely.
Cool.
Loving it up here.
I'm glad we could get this together, you guys. We're here mainly because we wanted to chat about your book that's coming out. You guys have a book you co-authored coming out June 1st. And we get to promote it. I'm super excited. We even got the early release or some materials from your handler or something. I don't know what you call that guy, but Sam's the guy who hooked us up.
Our people will call your people.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we got this thing going. So it's the book title, 100 Things Fish Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Andy and Jason wrote it. It's a great read, and the foreword actually, Mike Greenhouse has a really nice foreword in that that was exciting to read too. So let's ask a little bit about your guys, you know, just why you wanted to write this and how you got off the blocks to get the thing going. Andy, why don't you go ahead and start?
Yeah, sure. You know, Jason and I have both been writers for a long time now, and Triumph Books, the publisher, has had a lot of success with the 100 Things series. They're predominantly a sports book publisher, but have branched out into pop culture with this series. So they did 100 Things Star Wars, 100 Things Game of Thrones, and wanted to do 100 Things Fish, and reached out to Jason, who then reached out to Scotty Bernstein at Jambase and Yemblog, who then got me involved, and the rest is history. We're super excited. I mean, it was a really quick turnaround. We had about 6 weeks to write the book.
Oh wow!
Yeah, and you know, I think the biggest challenge, aside from just putting words down on the page, I mean, the book is 90,000 words. the biggest challenge was, you know, Jason and I kind of coming up with this list,
right,
of 100 things fish fans should know and do before they die.
Yeah.
And we worked really hard on that, with many late night phone calls and shared Google spreadsheets and, you know, prioritizing, well, this definitely has to be in there, and, you know, breaking things up and combining chapters. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, we could have written many, many more things that fish fans should know and do before they die. But for trying to package it into, you know, a book of 100 chapters, I'm happy with how it came out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great read. And Jason, what were the biggest challenges for you, I guess, that presented themselves while you were writing?
I think Andy started to nail it with the just coming up with a list. Mm-hmm. I think one of the more interesting parts was just right off the top of the head is, like, do we count every Halloween show as its own chapter?
Right, right.
You know, do we count every festival, every New Year's gag? Well, then we're at 40 right there.
Mm-hmm.
And then what are we leaving out? And so as we're going through the process, we had to whittle it down and try to figure out how do we combine things into, you know, cohesive standalone chapters. And that's kind of how this book is written, which I think is very cool. The idea is you could just skip to any chapter that you want to jump in, you know, read it, get a sense of something, and you don't have to go chapter through chapter. And one of the cool things about this and working with Andy is I think both of our voices came through in this, but yeah, sort of unique individual conversations that were happening, and how I was telling my tale, how we shared the things we wanted to say, but we came from very different standpoints. And it kind of hopefully will spark a conversation with all the fans out there. I know that's a big thing for both of us, is knowing that this is, you know, we could probably go back and add another, you know, 20 chapters with things rolling around their heads.
Right, right.
Fans that might have different perspectives on things. And we kind of love that. This isn't, you know, meant to be over. This is kind of just meant to be the beginning of a conversation and a dialogue. And we love going through this process. I know for me, just being able to think about fish this much when I, you know, outside of what I normally think about fish was kind of just nice.
Yeah.
It's like, this is my job. I got to think about fish right now. And I got to, you know, talk about fish. And I have to have a fish phone call. So it was pretty cool to have that on the agenda beyond just the normal crazy fandom that we like to
have. It reminds me of my wife when I tell her, you know, the podcast, especially when we first started it. Like, really? Are you really doing this? Or are you guys just like talking about fish? Like, well, both, actually. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's funny that you mentioned you can go kind of just randomly through it, because I, of course, jumped to like chapter 43 or 42, whichever one it is that, you know, talks about podcasts. I'm like, oh, yes. Right. this is exciting. So I also really loved going through each of your thoughts within the chapter, and then kind of, obviously, as we always do, kind of tying it into my own experience, you know, on Shakedown or with the albums, or, you know, defining like who's a Wook and, you know, who's a noob and all those things, all those that you guys talk about. It was really fun to read, and it's going to fall right into the wheelhouse of our listeners. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So, let's talk a little bit about your fish tree, your own personal history, Jason. Where did you, your first show? You know, we always like to ask about the first show, and also kind of, when you knew it was for you, the band.
Sure. I will start by saying there is probably my favorite part of the book is actually the back cover. And the reason I bring that up is it's all my stubs, and I got to take a picture of it. Oh. It's Orange County Fairgrounds in a 93 Horde Tour.
Oh, wow.
And that was the first time I saw fish in New York. That's where I'm originally from. And, Colonel Bruce Hampton, Blues Traveler, Widespread. I mean, it was a stacked lineup. Fish came on after midnight and opened with the 2001 Split Open to Melt. And it was amazing. I will say I got it, but I didn't quite get it. I'd say when I really got it was the next show that really blew my mind, which was Onondaga in 94, right after Halloween. And that show just for me was kind of all of a sudden the light bulbs went on, and it was on from that point forward. So, nice. Yeah.
So I didn't know that Fish was playing that late. you're saying after midnight, and it was
I think their set started late. I mean, I think at least when I've looked at the set list online, I mean, my memory from 25 plus or whatever years ago is a little hazy. But when I looked, I think that's what it says on Fishnet. I could double check that, but
and it was
I'm pretty sure it was they were the headliner. They were the last one to go on, and I think
they were they must have been playing. Oh yeah, Orange County Fairgrounds, right? And
yeah,
so they weren't playing like a pavilion where they were going to get kicked out, but.
It was like bandstand, you know, sawdust on the ground.
nice.
Yeah. And it was a stack lineup and, you know, I was there to see it all. I mean, still a high school kid and, they definitely showed me something that night.
That's awesome, man. That's great. You still see them now in 3.0?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. A teacher is the gig that I do. I'm married with a 3-year-old.
And, oh, awesome.
I still, maybe to my wife's chagrin, look at my summer plans and wait till I see what Fish announces before starting to make the rest of the family plans. And now I'm coming to the realization as a dad of a 3-year-old who's very aware of things like Halloween that that might become a little more challenging going forward. But I'm still going to, you know, I'm thinking maybe, you know, trick-or-treating in Vegas could be a new experience. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
So we last Halloween in Vegas, I hit the first 3 and I had to leave the morning of the 31st because you got dad things to do. So,
yeah.
You know, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. I'm glad I got to see 3 out of 4, you know. So,
yeah, they were great.
Right, totally. So, Andy, what about you? When's your first show? Was it that early, 93?
No. I went to my first show at the Gorge in 98.
Oh, wow.
And my dear supportive mother brought me and 3 friends out to the Gorge from Seattle where we were living. And been trading tapes for a while and Hoist had come out and I was just could not miss this opportunity to go and see Fish, even though it was at the Gorge 3 hours away. And, I don't even think I was 16 yet. And, hence having to have my mother take us.
Yeah. And you got to do it sometimes.
And bless her for it. You know, I mean, I think, I'm very grateful and fortunate to have, you know, a mother who would do that for her teenage son and their friends. And
right.
I was immediately hooked and blown away by the whole experience. Like I had never seen anything like it. And I remember just so vividly, I mean, the landscape of the Gorge and the crowd of the people and just sort of the vibe and the atmosphere was kind of overwhelming. And then at a certain point, you know, for anybody who's been to the Gorge, you know, the sun sets behind the stage, overlooking the Columbia River. And as the sun was setting, can't remember what song they were playing, but everybody kind of dropped out, but Fishman, who just played this like gentle drum roll for the sunset.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, crescendo at sunset and the crowd roars and then they just picked right back up where they were before the drum roll for the sunset. And
yep. That reminds me of the recent Howling at the Moon. I think that was at the Gorge too, wasn't it? Anyway, so.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, but I was immediately entranced and immediately blown away and have since returned to the Gorge a few times.
Yeah.
And I saw probably, I would say more than most shows of 2.0. And then I think, you know, after when 3.0 started, I caught a few shows here and there, but since I saw them at the Man 2015, the summer of two shows at the Man, I just think they've been performing some incredible stuff and I'm trying to catch as much as I can. I did 13 of the Baker's Dozen.
Oh, you did all of them. Wow.
I did all of them. Nice. I didn't plan on doing all of them.
Yeah.
I didn't. And it was funny too, because the fourth night, the Lawn Boy, the Jam Donut.
Yeah.
I went down there without a ticket and scored one for $30. And after that, there was no scoring $30 ticket by any means.
Right, right.
So I was pretty excited. I just went online on Ticketmaster the next day and bought the last two nights and made the rest of it work between friends and trades and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. But, yeah. A few of my other friends who live in the city were the same way. They're like, you know, I wasn't really planning on this and this is really killing my work, but like, dude, I got to go, which is a testament to the run, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, it was, I think, an incredible experience as a whole. And if, you know, diving into each show, I mean, I think the Baker's Dozen chapter in 100 Things Fish is the longest chapter in the book.
Nice.
You know, I think it's something that people will be speaking about when they speak about fish in you know, in the coming years in the annals of history.
Right.
I think, you know, and Jason and I have talked a lot about this, you know, whether it's Big Cypress and Baker's Dozen or Baker's Dozen and Big Cypress, you know, that's what fish will be remembered for, I think.
Yep. I totally agree. What an incredible thing. And we're lucky enough to have them, you know, back with, and they just announced the fall tour run. But what I wanted to mention, was that the book was really relevant too. You know, you could tell you guys recently wrote it because there was a lot of stuff, recent stuff that was included. And nowadays when I pick up a book, you don't expect to have such updated or recent information in it. So, was there any parameters, you know, put on by the editors and the publishers and everybody about what needed to be included, or did they just kind of set you guys free?
Well, as far as it being up to the minute, we realized that, you know, we were going to New Year's anyway. We're going to have an opportunity to see the New Year's show. We weren't initially planning on. We thought Baker's Dozen would be like a really neat ending point. And it was like,
sure.
Well, we're still editing this. we were able to kind of get it really literally to the last fish show,
right,
which was kind of cool to have that moment. As far as from Triumph, they just wanted to make sure that we were, you know, they gave us a lot of leeway to make these choices and make sure that we were, representing the band and the fans as best we could. So,
cool.
There were some people along the way that had some interest in fish, but not to the level that they wanted to kind of step into the creative process. So we were given pretty good leeway with that. It was our choices about what we included.
I mean, you know, just a building on to that, Jason, like, I just want to give a shout out to Triumph Books and our incredible editor, Michelle, who, yes, really championed the project, really believed in Jason and I as the authors and advocates for this book, and to sort of really trust our judgment all the way up until like the very end, where we're like, yes, we need to slip in this photo of the pirate ship in the introduction. and she, you know, made it happen for us.
And that was one of your own photos?
It was one.
Jason's pick, yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, Michelle was awesome. She really was.
Yeah, she really supported us all the way up to, I mean, like, you know, as you saw, there are a lot of photos and illustrations in the book, and, you know, they had never really worked with illustrations in a book before, but I have these two great friends who I think were super talented and were excited to make up some fish drawings, and so, you know, we got them in the book.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
And then most of the photos are Jason's, actually. But then there are a few other photographers, Stephen Olker, who has about five or six photos in the book,
sure.
Professional photographer. And then, the handful of other photos came from actually an open call for photography, for the book that, again, Triumph was super supportive of. We put the open call out through fansite.com and got hundreds of submissions.
Nice.
From people. some better than others, of course, but all of them just sort of speaking to the community and love for this band and the experience of hitting the road and going and traveling to see this band. You know, photos from you know, from the 90s that still have timestamps from the film you know.
Yeah.
It's just really nice to just have this outpouring of photos being shared from other fans. And we were, you know, lucky enough to be able to put a bunch of them in the book.
I loved it. It makes it different. It makes it stick out a little bit. I think the first one I saw was the YEM, the like bring the trampolines or bring on the trampoline. And there's that full page illustration I thought caught my eye. So there's also profiles of the four of them in the book. What did you guys kind of do that on your own, or did you have to contact Fish, or did you have any communication with Red Light Management or anything like that?
No, I mean the book is unsanctioned, but we have corresponded with the folks at Waterwheel to involve them in some capacity this summer at the shows, and hoping to be able to speak more about that in the coming weeks, you know, I hope that. That we can get the book to the band, you know. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear what they have to think, you know, to say about it, and to see what parts maybe hopefully would jog their memories or elicit some sort of, you know, bond emotions. And you know, I mean, for Jason and I, it's like, yeah, of course it was work. It was, you know, we're professional writers. But I mean, we just love this band and love the fans of this band, and to be able to dedicate, you know, a few months of our lives to putting all of this down and pushing it through to like a realization that is this physical object. That I think, you know, like with the photos and illustrations, and that the packaging job that Triumph did is something that we're both really proud of, and hopefully it can inspire people, and hopefully people will reach out to us to chat more about Fish and come to the events. Maybe I'll plug the events.
Yeah, do it.
So with me on the East Coast and Jason on the West Coast, we're hosting two book release parties. The book comes out June 1st, and so on June 1st, the East Coast book release party is at Brooklyn Bowl here in New York with Dead Fish Orchestra. We're going to have a Fish trivia contest with prizes, and then Dead Fish Orchestra is playing two sets. And then on Saturday, June 2nd, Jason's hosting an event at the Imperial Bar and Tap Room in Portland, Oregon, on the afternoon, signing and selling copies and listening to Fish. And then you have that exclusive beer, Jason.
Yeah, so Coalition Brewing is a brewer out here in Portland, makes really great beer, and I have some fans that help run them. And so my friends at Imperial Bottle Shop and I kind of were conspiring about how we can make this awesome. Like, well, what about brewing a special beer for the event? I was like, yes, that would be awesome.
And so, that qualifies.
Personally, I'm like a stout and sour guy, but I realize that's not for the masses. And so we kind of realized that we got to go hazy.
Yeah,
it's a New England style beer. This is a New England band. Kind of makes sense,
right?
And but the best part about it is I got to name it. And so I came up with at least 10 different puns of fish-related ways of working the word hazy into things. And we went with Hazy DC Bag.
Oh, nice.
We're going to have that. And then there's a couple other breweries that are in Oregon that have other fans of them. And so Block 15 is going to be supplying two that are – one's called The Wedge and one's called Welcome, This is a Farmhouse. And then there's a third brewery I can look it up. Unfortunately, I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's a jam band themed beer. So we're going to have a variety of different beers, kind of fish themed, jam band themed. I'm going to throw on some of my favorite tunes, hang out 3 to 6. It's kind of more mellow event, but it is 21 and over. So
happy hour style. You know, yeah.
Happy hour style. Exactly.
That's awesome.
We'll be celebrating and hope to have a few more events along the way. So this is just kind of the piece, but it's summertime. Let's do this.
And we're doing an event on June 22nd in Burlington with the kind folks at Cash or Trade.
Oh, nice.
We're putting on a party at the Skinny Pancake, and Formula 5 is performing, and we're having a raffle with Water Wheel and Cash or Trade swag. All the details for all the events are on the book's website, which is 100thingsfish.com. And so all the Facebook links and details around the book and the events, you can check it out there.
Are you guys on Twitter at all?
We haven't set up the Twitter account yet.
Okay. Or your personal? I mean, you don't have to. I was just wondering.
Yeah, yeah. I'm at AP Smith NYC, and also at Fansite, which is PHAN_SITE. And the book is also on Instagram and Facebook at 100 Things Fish.
Awesome. And we do have a 100 Things Fish Twitter account. We haven't been using it yet. We're getting this thing rolling. We kind of wanted it all buttoned up and ready to go before we started to, even though it is 2 weeks out, we wanted to make sure, we had dotted our I's and crossed our T's. And so we're kind of, now the website's up, we're ready. We got 2 weeks to the event. We're making the move. So
that's great.
You'll probably see some stuff from out soon.
That's exciting. Do you guys have like full blown published books of your own before this? Or just like, I see that you've written a bunch of places, both of you guys, but a full blown, hardbound book. Is this something new for you guys?
Yeah. I self-published a book in 2005.
Nice.
It was a collection of essays and interviews called Welcome to the Land of Cannibalistic Horses. And, early 20s sort of adventurous manifesto, if you will. Featured interviews with people like the organ player at Wrigley Field and the guy who invented the Bigfoot monster truck and the photographer David LaChapelle and, a brief interview with Hunter S. Thompson and Wesley Willis covered like the American landscape sort of political spectrum. I wrote it during the 2004 election cycle. But the book was five parts, the third of which was about Fish Tour 2004, which, as you know, at the time was slated to be the final Fish Tour and leading up the final festival at Coventry. And so, in maybe a couple years ago, I ended up pulling that section out of the horses book and repackaging it as its own sort of small, like little 100-page book. And so that's available on Fansite and Amazon. This is my first,
non self-published
paid commercial, fully fledged book deal. Yeah.
That's exciting. Super exciting. I'd also love to hear about or read the 2004, kind of your overview of that tour. Tell me a little bit about your experience. I'm so interested in the 2.0 kind of, I don't know if you're a hardcore fan, but the fans who have spent most of their time there, were your friends in that era as well? Like, how did you come out of it? Are your feelings now about Fish still, do they still kind of trickle back to 2.0? Obviously mine trickle back to 95 and 96 when I first saw them. So, a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, for me, the 2.0 era was, I was literally on the road with my friends hitting every single Fish show. I was in college, so my responsibilities were slim to none.
Right.
And, I would sell beer and cigarettes on lot to pay for gas and lodging. And I think, one thing that I've certainly remember fondly about the 2.0 era is, it was never as difficult to get tickets as it is now.
Yeah.
And I would go to countless shows without a ticket and never have a problem finding a ticket for Face or less. I remember, trying to sell a pack of cigarettes and, somebody's like, how much? And I'm selling $5 packs just to date it,
mm-hmm.
And I give him a pack of cigarettes and he just hands me a ticket to the show. I just think that kind of stuff I don't see that happening these days. And maybe that's because I'm an older man now and I don't have dreadlocks anymore. But, the 2.0 era, I was, sleeping in a tent or sleeping in the back of a car with dreadlocks, selling beer and cigarettes and, with really no cares and no responsibilities beyond just getting into the next show.
Yeah.
And, I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have a Facebook account. And so literally I remember, at the last night of Coventry, hugging my friends and saying goodbye or saying I'll see you later, but really having no means to communicate with them beyond that. And, I lost touch with a big group of people just because at the time it was, I'll see you at the next show. I'll see you in Raleigh. I'll see you in Alpine, like whatever. Yeah. And I've since found a few of them on Facebook and, we all, everybody has families and has mortgages and this, that, and the other. But connected with a couple of them during the Baker's Dozen, which felt really good. And, Fish for me back then, I was, early 20s, and it was an adventure. Fish for me now is a little bit more calculated.
Sure.
And, I experience Fish in a different way now than I did then. Now it's a little bit more tailored towards the music and the 3 hours that the band is playing than, the sort of road trip adventure element of it.
Which was a great time back then, especially as you mentioned, without cell phones or even a smartphone to, tweet where you're going or will you meet up. How do we even survive back then? I don't even know, but,
Yeah, exactly. I mean, crazy to me that we literally had a bounded atlas, like a freaking road atlas to get from, Chicago to Alpine. And it's just like, how did we even make that happen?
It's true. Yeah, I've been lost outside of Alpine before, I'll tell you that.
I think, if you haven't been to Alpine unless you've been lost, right there. Yeah.
Somebody posted the other day a picture of some old stubs where the band on the mail orders actually have a little bit of directions to the venue.
Right.
It just kind of shows how dated things are. It's like, this is not really, maybe that's what we had, that and Atlas and just hope.
From the north.
Follow the
Yeah. That's awesome. Jason, what do you have, your fondest period of time for the band, other than maybe the Baker's Dozen recently, but going back, is there a place that you always land?
I've been very fortunate with my fishing through my life, just specifically around festivals and holiday shows. Living in Oregon for the last 15, 16 years has been a little tricky just because Fish doesn't really play here. So the benefit of that is I'm forced to travel. And so I try not to miss many New Year's or Halloween's along the way. And I'd say for me, Cyprus, obviously, I mean, there's nothing that could touch the amount of time and energy and power and passion that they put into that. It was a marathon of, a one day portion. I'd say, obviously Baker's Dozen for the longevity. But to me, there's something about Halloween, all the Fish Halloweens. I've been very lucky. I haven't missed one since 95, and this might be the first one coming up that I'm going to miss.
That's incredible. Yeah.
So,
wow.
But for me, I think they take playing somebody else's music so seriously and rehearse and focus and the energy that goes into that, that it just beautifully bleeds into everything else that they're playing. So it's not just about the cover set, but I feel like they are as on point with their own music during Halloween run. So 96, 98, 2014. I guess I'm giving kind of like the longitudinal, across time view versus one.
No, that's great.
But for me, there was something Fish related that I would always want to make sure happened was check out Halloween.
Sure.
I think summer 2015 from recent times was pretty. I mean, I feel like they hit their stride big time that summer tour. And that was a really, really good time in the last few years outside of the Baker's Dozen, where I thought every night was just, they were just pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I like the old school stuff. just hitting the road, 95, getting in, you know, crazy blizzards on the way from one show to the other. And,
you know,
thinking back, I'd say those mid-90s shows really stood out sort of as this idyllic time for the band, and also for who I was, the carefree, no responsibilities really in the world, and just living in New York where the band would play about an hour and a half from my home, you know, 15 times a year.
Yeah,
it is the perils of living out west, but it's worth it in the scheme of life. But in the scheme of fish, it just means you got to get your frequent flyer mile together and really work it.
Yeah, that's what, you know, and for the festival this summer, the Curveball, you just had to do it. I got to take my lumps and get to DC, meet up with RJ, and we'll head up north like we did for Magna Ball. But, you know, I also don't have to deal with. We don't have to deal with the New York stuff like Andy does, right? Like the people on the subway and stuff. I don't know. Although that shit's fun though, I guess, right?
Yeah. People on the subway can be difficult sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sweet. So Jason, I wanted to ask what just give us a little hint of what you're going to play on June 2nd at the what's it, the Imperial Tap Room? Is that what you call it?
It's a good question. I've actually thought about that today. I haven't made my mind up yet, but I do have you know, a specific jam in my head that has always kind of been my go-to of my favorite 1-2 punch of the band, and it's one of my favorite moments I've seen live of them. It was West Palm '96. They released the video of that.
Yeah.
The Cross-Eyed Antelope.
Oh yeah.
It's just 45 minutes of absolute musical bliss. And I haven't thought beyond that, but I tend to like to use that in special situations.
It's just on the list, right? Yeah.
It should be.
The Coral Sky, right? Isn't that what they call that release? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Yep. That was in West Palm.
You can't go wrong with that.
Beyond that, you know, it's tricky because do you want to have the socializing little, you know, My Sweet Ones, or do you want to have like a down and dirty tweezer for a half hour? You know,
yeah.
You could really go either direction. But I'm assuming for my own mental stability, since I am going to want to chat with friends, I might not want to get too lost into a jam. So I got to figure this out. There's some thought and processing that needs to go into this.
Need to make that playlist.
Right.
That's awesome. Well, I'm excited to and maybe post a little bit of it on the soon to be working 100 Things Fish Twitter account, right?
Yes.
Yes. Soon to be active. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. All right. You know, I don't know. Any final words? This is super exciting. Like I mentioned, the 100 Things Fish fans should know and do before they die, both, you know, co-authored by Andy and Jason's, comes out June 1st. It's going to fall right into our listeners' wheelhouse. There's no doubt about it. I really enjoyed it. Started in the middle, finished at the beginning. It's a great read, and it's, you know, you don't have to just go front to back. So, anything you guys got summer plans or festival plans?
Well, Brad, I would love to hear more from you about what you thought of the book, or if there were certain chapters that stood out, or any surprises, or
I don't know if there were surprises. Like I mentioned, the one thing I really liked the illustrations, the art that was in it, because I didn't expect it. So that kind of maybe was a little different. I also liked each album got its own chapter. Is that right?
Yeah, each studio album and a live one.
Yeah, which I thought was incredible because they don't get enough credit for that stuff. A live one was obviously the first like double CD disc. We talked about it a bunch. With their 94 material combined. But the studio albums don't get enough credit. And I thought, I really liked that you guys dug into those. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, you actually talked about it, selling beer and cigarettes. I loved that. That's like the Shakedown Street. Come to Shakedown chapter. And you interviewed somebody, she's 38 and she used to sell, you know, something. You know, a little bit of our experience. I thought that was a really cool chapter. I really enjoyed them all, man. It was fun. I thought the history was well done, right? Because you got to give, maybe everybody who picks up the book isn't gonna have the depth of knowledge that, you know, a lot of us do. So I thought that was really cool. Going into the history of each of the guys and how they got started. Yeah, man. Awesome. It was really well done. Great. Yeah, really well done. And I think everybody's going to enjoy it. So, again, appreciate you guys taking the time to come on the Helping Friendly Podcast. You guys can always check us out at HF Pod or Helping Friendly Podcast. .com. You guys, your website is 100thingsfish.com.
Yes.
Right? And AP Smith NYC.
Yep.
Is the Twitter. And Jason, do you have a functioning Twitter account?
Well, like I said before, I'm a teacher, so I try to keep a little bit of a
lower
a line between those things. So I think I think we have 100 Things Fish
at Twitter too.
Account. I think I grabbed it before the book was publicly out there because somebody else will grab it and charge us money. so I just need to dig that up and figure it out and get rolling with that. I think,
I think we're at that point. This podcast will be the first tweet that we send out.
That's a good start, though. That's a good start.
Right? Yeah, we're up and running at that point, right?
Shit's legit now, right? Yeah. Awesome. Exactly.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil Story Made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
All right, we hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jason and Andy. Appreciate those guys taking the time and talking with us before their book comes out. So, as always, get in touch with us on Facebook, Twitter, email, the internets, any way you want to. If you want to hear more HF Pod, check out HF Pod Plus. There'll be a link in the show notes. And we're going to go out with some music. But before then, just want to say thanks for listening. Keep on rocking.
This podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with live experiences and podcasts about artists and topics you love. Get in the loop at osirispod.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Amara Jones. Every day, the attacks on trans kids grow louder, and more anti-trans bills keep moving through state legislatures. In this season of the anti-trans hate machine, we're going to illuminate how the right wing has fueled these bills by generating a breathtaking and wide-ranging disinformation campaign.
It's spreading like wildfire on the internet. It's then being discussed by families and churches.
None of this is an accident. It's a strategy to delegitimize trans people and create a world where existence is a question. Subscribe to season 2 of the Anti-Trans Hate Machine, A Plot Against Equality, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello out there.
Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!